This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omised, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at Omised.com. That's A-L-M-A-S-E-D.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Live from West Palm Beach. Thanks to Academy Sports and Outdoors and Exclusive Furniture. Here's Payne and Fendergast.
Yeah, big thanks, Exclusive Furniture and Academy Sports and Outdoors, for sending us here. Excited to get out to the yard today. Beautiful outside here in West Palm Beach. Big congrats to Billy in Houston, who is on his way to see Zach Top. Tuesday, March 11th.
Good job, Billy.
Good job, Billy. Way to be caller number 5. Sure, you worked on it all weekend long, dialing and whatnot, and it worked. All the hard work you put in, Billy, has you going to Zach Top on March the 11th on Tuesday.
All right, Zach Top looks like one of your favorite junior high baseball coaches.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's got that look about him. Yeah.
Junior high baseball coach look.
You know, Rikidi's kind of got like a little league dad look?
Big time.
Yeah, I feel like Zach Top's got a junior high baseball coach look to him. He's got a mustache and he's just got that pleasant look about him.
Yeah, pleasant look.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think back to my junior high baseball coach. Mr. Forcelina. Yeah.
Sounds like a dirtbag.
Mr. Forcelina. You met his son Jay. He's the one who came in studio. His son Jay is the one I used to get in trouble with all the time.
See?
Yeah.
See?
Dirtbag.
He was awesome. I didn't expect that to hit home with somebody you knew or remembered.
Mr. Forcelina was great, man. He's like Tommy Lasorda. He's like 5'6", 280 pounds with a big old belly. All right, Pettycast time. Let's get to the – okay. We may not make it to the other petties because we've got so much on this new GM in Jacksonville. And this is important. This is the team, Seth, I said before the offseason, before the season was over, I said the biggest threat to the Texans in the AFC South is that they find a head coach and a GM that right the ship there, start getting out of Trevor Lawrence what they thought they were going to get out of Trevor Lawrence when they, A, drafted him first overall,
yeah,
and B, paid him one of the dumbest contracts in the history of the sport.
Ah.
Right?
Yes.
The worst thing that could happen to the Texans in the division, in my opinion, is Trevor Lawrence actually becoming worth the money he's being paid.
Right. And they've got a very promising coach in Liam Cohen. They did hire I'm not joking, a 29-year-old offensive coordinator.
Udinski,
the guy that was he officially interviewed by Texans?
He was, for their job.
So he's a wonder kid. And it's intriguing because they seem to be bringing in a lot of bright young dudes.
It's all first-timers.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. Even Tony Boselli, who's in this senior football advisor role or whatever, that's his first time working on the actual football side of things. So it's a big experiment. It's as was the Urban Meyer experiment. Yet another experiment in Jacksonville.
Credit to Shad Khan, not afraid to experiment. Yeah. So James Gladstone is the name of the new GM.
He's 34 years old. But looks 23.
Oh, yeah. And he looks 23, and he looks like a kid from an 80s movie that would have definitely been the sidekick to a bully. He would have been the bully himself. Uh-huh. He looks like the one who would have been like snickering next to the bully.
Yeah.
As the, you know, as like, you know, like a port, like a kid gets tipped over in a portal.
He's the
one,
he's the bully sidekick who's the one that comes up to the kid who's being bullied, the protagonist. And it was like, listen, man, Jimmy, listen, you know how this works, okay? Jimmy's going to get this girl, okay? And there's ways we can make you.
Yeah.
There's ways we can make it happen,
yeah,
all right?
He's the negotiator.
So just lay off. He tries to act like he's a good guy or
okay,
something.
Okay, well, that's appropriate because he's now a GM of an NFL team where a lot of negotiation like that may go on.
Shot Khan is Jimmy.
Shot Khan. may very well be. All right, so James.
And then the Tony Khan is like the little guy in Harlem Nights with the tiny gun.
You're Tony Khan in all these pictures, man.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right, let's get to James Gladstone here. He's the new GM of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Why is this in the petty cast? Because if this guy gets over on the Texans in any way, shape, or form, I am going to be so petty. He comes from the Rams. Mm-hmm. He's got a good reputation there.
Director of scouting there the last couple years where they've drafted very, very well.
Drafted very well. So Jags fans are already taking a victory lap that he's already drafted three drafts like that for them. Here he is with his message to Jags fans.
To the Jaguar fan base, I turn to you. With Liam's vision, with a disciplined approach, you know, we're going to bring you a product that you all can be proud of. And we are so appreciative of your support. With that, game on.
Duval.
Those are your two guys that are running things.
Okay,
Game on guy and Duval guy. Those are your two guys that are running
things. It's
a dicey
part of running reading a scripted statement if you're not an actual speaker.
Yeah.
It's tough. If you're going to do game on, you got to bring some kind of emotion to it or something.
It's got to be improv.
Allow that be the one part that's not completely scripted.
Yeah.
At least look up and act like you've ever said the word. Act like you've ever said game on in your life
yes,
before.
Yes, yeah. He does not look like a game on guy.
I feel like a lot of these things that he said were written by AI.
Are you ready?
Which, you know, as a bright young guy in the analytical world, I wouldn't put it past him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, your spidey sense is tingling here, then, because you may be right about this. Here is James Gladstone, new GM of the Jags. Texan fans, I'm asking you to sit here and listen to this and ask yourselves, are you nervous about this guy? What do they prioritize in players?
Great question. I'm glad you asked. I think it's pretty simple from my perspective. We will prioritize people and players that are intangibly rich. And by doing so, they will elevate our ecosystem, our team, by being nothing more than themselves. So it's as simple as that.
Intangibly rich
and ecosystem.
An ecosystem full of intangibly rich phytoplankton.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. What the hell?
Are you jotting down the little catchphrases over there that he's saying?
Well, let's see. We have got game on. We've got intangibly rich, and we've got ecosystem.
Ecosystem. You better get ready. Your hand may get tired on this next cut here coming up. All right, you ready for more James Gladstone?
Yeah.
This is the petty cast.
I do. There's a part of me that appreciates him saying ecosystem instead of culture. Intangibly rich instead of saying it factor.
Yeah.
I do appreciate some
you
of that.
You do? Okay. Well, your
but
appreciation.
It feels like he's trying way too hard.
Your appreciation may go out the window. He was asked, how are you cutting edge?
I think that, I have a fresh perspective, I'd say. A deep understanding of really the modern tools and mechanisms that are revolutionizing the sport. And so, that'll certainly be something that we leverage here. While at the same time, I mean, we're walking into the combine this afternoon, right? And so the current mode of operation is in rhythm. The cadence is in place. So my intent here through this initial spring is to really calibrate my own mode of operation to the current mode of operation, insert some specific efficiencies that'll help me better understand our group's insights and perspectives, and then assess at the end of this spring what types of things we can roll out into the future. But we'll certainly, put the pedal to the metal on a lot of advanced sort of modes of operation.
Advanced modes of operations. Oh my God!
Yeah, dude,
I almost got carpal tunnel. Modern tools that are revolutionizing the sport. The mode of operations is already in rhythm.
Oh yeah,
they want to calibrate the mode of operations.
Yeah,
they want to insert efficiencies.
Efficiencies are a big one. Yeah,
let's go insert some efficiencies,
dude,
and then assess.
And then assess. And then assess.
This guy, I don't want to use advanced jargon on this guy, but feels like he's all hat, no cattle.
Could you?
This is a whole lot of... There's a whole lot of jargon, man. I get nervous about people that have spent too much time reading about how to do things instead of actually doing them.
Yeah.
I feel like he's one of these guys that'll go sit down at a coffee shop for 5 hours studying how to be more productive.
Stop going to coffee shops.
As you're not producing a single damn thing. I've got flow charts here about how I'm going to be more productive. Right, but that report was due to me this afternoon.
Oh, my God.
Yes, but in the future, I will be churning out three times as many reports because I spent so much time learning how to be productive.
That's an Easterby vibe right there, right?
Yeah.
All those big words and whatnot and efficiencies and all sorts of corporate buzzwords.
It comes straight out of some book that you read that just – it's going to revolutionize the way we operate.
Unbelievable.
It's fine. This is the problem, though. This is the thing. With most – self-improvement books.
Yeah.
What you have to do is not become a serial self-improvement book person.
Yeah.
You got to find one or two or three that you like and then latch onto them with a death grip.
So the credos
live
of those
it
books.
Like that is your Bible.
Yeah.
But you can't be reading one a week and like because you find yourself reinventing your modes of operations and trying to insert efficiencies all the time instead of just getting the damn job done, you young punk.
Seth is
Get
leaning
the hell out of my face.
Seth
Get
is-
out of my office. This is what I sentence you to. I sentence you to go work on a dairy farm for 3 weeks and get some of this sass pounded out of your stupid little brain.
Last one here. Last one. This is how I think this at least helped him get the job. It was brought up in a question about analytics that, you know, like, hey, Tony handles some of that. Tony Khan.
Son of the owner
who's seems a little off kilter.
We've let him be in charge of undrafted free agents,
and he brags about it like it's like he drafted Trevor Lawrence or something. Yeah. So he was – Gladstone was asked about analytics within the context of that being Tony's department.
Tony will be leveraged for sure. His insight and understanding is top tier. So that in and of itself is an edge that we can utilize. Beyond that, the biggest item that I can articulate at this stage and will for our staff is not that analytics is ever doing anything other than supporting our current mode of operation and the traditional ways in which we approach evaluations.
I hate him. I just hate him. I hate this guy. I hope Jacksonville goes 1-16 next year.
I think he's a droid.
Yeah. He's a droid.
He doesn't come off like a human at all.
How about Tony Khan being positioned as an edge?
How about Tony Baselli trying to have a conversation with this kid?
Well, Tony was part of this decision.
I know, but I think at some point Tony Baselli is going to want to bash him. I think he just want to pick him up and bash him.
Yeah. Man. Okay, so that's what's in Jacksonville. Petty in so much as, hey, the kid may be successful, but I love making fun of him right now.
Now, this is the one thing.
Yeah.
He can get away with all that stuff that he just spewed out if he's a genuine genius. Maybe he is.
Maybe he
doesn't have a touch, the human touch, and partly it's because he's a little bit detached. You know, he's off in his own world. So you got to be a genius, though. You can get away with it if you're a genius.
I'm going to tell you right now, and I mean, this may come back to bite me, but anytime a team that's in your division or your rivals with, they've got to hire a new head coach and a GM, I'm going to sit back afterwards and say, how do I feel from the perspective of my team? I love the hires that the Jacksonville Jaguars made.
Okay.
Between Mr. Duval.
Yeah.
Well, you know what you love is you love the whole head-to-head matchup of, okay, let's look at the quarterback headshot. Let's look at the head coach headshot of both teams.
Yeah.
And then let's look at the GMs side by side.
Yes.
And I feel like, okay, C.J. Stroud next to Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, I trust C.J.'s face.
D'Amico Ryan's next to
Liam Cohen. It's not even close. Yeah.
God help Liam Cohen if they actually had to do a fist.
Liam Cohen looks like he ate paste back in elementary school.
Right. Yeah. It was like a connoisseur of it. It was like a random weird habit or something.
Is this Elmer's?
He was like hiding in a closet so he could down the whole thing.
1997
jar.
Elmer's? Yeah. Yeah.
And then Nick Caserio next to this droid.
Yeah, I'll take Caserio. Unless they're going to take that picture of Caserio floating around the internet where he's got his old wire-rimmed glasses on from back in the day. Because he does look like a droid in that picture. He's still better than James Gladstone. But a normal Nick Caserio picture, yes. James Gladstone looks like the Night King in Game of Thrones. Have you spray painted him light blue?
You sent me a side by side picture of the two, and I was kind of shocked by how accurate you were.
Like the shape of the face and everything. It's very pointy.
Yeah.
You know? Hey, let's get to a couple other petties here. Texture's in 713-572-4610. My favorite development this sports season, this college basketball season, is I feel like every pettycast has included at least one big-time college basketball coach. Here's Tom Izzo, the latest college basketball codger to call out his players or society in general.
You play real good, you start. You don't play as good, you work your way back in. It's the American way, except America has gotten soft. But that is the American way. That's the way it works. And so I apologize to nobody for that.
Why a college basketball? It's by far the most.
I know,
the college basketball coaches as an industry have gotten so petty.
On America.
Yeah.
Except America's gotten soft.
He's got some kid who's complaining at practice about not starting anymore, and all of a sudden America's soft. Oh, my God. That's great.
I don't know. You're right. It's these college. Maybe it's just there's that much more. There's that many more cameras and microphones around now.
I don't
know.
We're
just seeing it more.
These are all at press. I mean, yes, like social media. Like I never would have seen that if it weren't for Twitter.
Yeah.
But it just feels like, I think the feel to it is the era. Like I think college basketball feels the NIL more than football.
No, 100%. I think that in football, maybe just because of the nature of the sport, how regimented it is, maybe it doesn't bother the coaches as much. But like with basketball, where it's a smaller group of guys, and then I think the egos and the star mentality or the diva potential is higher in basketball just because of the how small it is and how much one individual player matters.
I think 100% right.
I bet guys are – and it's – especially for a basketball coach, it's that much more frustrating – when you can't get through to one or two of your most important players.
Yeah.
In football, there's always kids you're not getting through to, but there's never one other than, you know, in this college, it's not even your quarterback. There's never one that's just, like, the linchpin to all your success. Where in basketball, it's that way. So
yes.
I bet they're feeling especially frustrated.
Yep.
Because it's true. I know. Okay, like, I know all arguments about whether America's gotten so. Generally, every successive generation – until everything goes down in flames, like, we're all going to be softer than the previous generation. So I don't even argue against that. We are. I'm softer than my father was. My father's softer than my grandfather was. At some point, if there's an apocalypse and then we're back to the Stone Age, then those people will be tough as hell.
Yes.
But until then, that's fine. I said, when I see high school athletes and like the ones that my friends work with and everything, I feel like these are good kids.
Right.
I feel like they're better kids than a lot of the way we acted in a lot of ways. Maybe it's because the stuff I'm remembering wasn't stuff that we said in front of adults.
Yep.
But the NIL is just a whole different dynamic.
I think that's what's fueling it.
Yeah.
Like with guys like Izzo. A lot of texts on James Gladstone. Was at Easterby. A bunch of word salad.
Yeah.
Coach speak goat.
Mm.
That wasn't even coach speak.
That was
like corporate speak.
No, that was try hard Silicon Valley bro speak.
That's what
it is. That was somebody that's trying way too hard, even by Silicon Valley standards.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah, it's exactly.
He said something. At some point, I waited for him to say that he was a disruptor. That's one of the new ones. Oh, I'm a disruptor.
The Rock likes that one.
What are you disrupting? The normal paradigms. Okay, define paradigm, you sap.
Someone texts in, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, how important are participation deviations? That's one that got left out in the Gladstone.
What was participation deviation?
I think they're just sending that in as a term that maybe he didn't use. Yeah. Looks like he ate paste. Accurate AF. Yeah, Liam Cohen does. He looks like he ate paste back in elementary.
So it's a very young feeling crew. I was wondering about that though too. Is Liam Gladstone? He's 34 years old. Do 34-year-olds feel like, oh, that guy's too young to be a GM? Or is it because you and I have gotten older that now we're looking at these whippersnappers who are in their mid-30s? Bona fide men.
Yeah.
But is that just us being grumpy old men because America has gotten soft?
34 is definitely young. I think it comes to me. I wouldn't blink if a team hired a 34-year-old GM if I knew. Like he seems like a 34-year-old that's snowed over a billionaire.
Yeah.
Who's been snowed over many times before, including by the previous GM for many years. So And to your point, the kid looks like he's 23 years old.
Yeah.
So I don't think 34, I mean, there's probably a little what you're talking about is baked into it, you and I being a little bit older. But I'm not anti. I was always the youngest. But before I got into radio, I was the youngest of every job I had. You know what I mean? Like along the way, like getting, you know, like in management and stuff. Yeah. So I can't sit here like and not be hypocritical and say, oh, he's too young.
Theo Epstein was 28 when he got the Red Sox.
That's really
job.
Young. And that
That's
was
the, super
and that,
young.
And that was back in like 2000.
That was back when there was still an argument about 2002.
Yeah.
That was an argument against about analytics. For I mean, that was.
It was a revolutionary
that
hire.
Was a ballsy move,
yes.
man.
Yeah.
Hiring a 28-year-old analytics dude in the year 2002.
For a team that hadn't won a World Series in nearly a century.
Yeah.
You know, it and has a you're taking on
the Yeah. What are you, how are you going to do? Oh, we're going to copy the A's. We're like, oh, great.
Yeah.
Have you noticed they haven't actually won anything with this whole Moneyball shenanigans?
Yep. Yep.
All right. Which, by the way, kids, that's your answer when anybody tries to point out. If you ever get, if you get stuck in some conversation with somebody who refuses to acknowledge that Moneyball became, it didn't just work, it became adopted by everybody.
Yeah.
When they say that the A's didn't win a championship, point out that like pretty much 75% of the championships won since them have been with those same principles.
No doubt. Yeah. No doubt. All right. Speaking of which, the Astros, they won a couple World Series adhering to some of those principles. Is Nolan Arenado going to be an Astro? Bob Nightingale was on Area 45 last night. Very plugged in. Shed some light on where this is right now. The potential, or lack thereof, maybe, of an Arenado trade to the Astros. We'll hear from Bob Nightingale from last night's Night Show, Area 45, here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Live from West Palm Beach. Thanks to Academy Sports and Outdoors and Exclusive Furniture. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. We'll be headed out to Astros Mets today here in West Palm Beach.
Yeah, we might get to see a little Keith Hernandez sighting.
No, oh, yeah, he's the color analyst for the Mets.
Yeah,
that'll be fun. One of the all-time great Seinfeld cameos, Keith Hernandez.
Yeah,
really, not even a cameo. He was like a big part of that episode.
Well, he's entertaining. What are we doing for a little while? We're playing their play-by-play commentary. For some reason,
he's very outspoken.
I do. Well, no, and he's goofy too.
Yeah.
Like he has fun with it. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll have to try to grab some of his. We're not going to do this.
Say hello.
We're going to do any of that. But do you think Juan Soto?
I think we could get a picture with him.
Do you think Juan Soto plays nine innings today? Do we get a Juan Soto sighting?
Well, they play him again on Thursday. I think the Mets.
If I don't get it, I'm going to jeer him. I will jeer the hell out of him.
Let's do that. If he's playing, let's go out to the outfield and yell at him.
Yeah, brick bats and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Are you bringing that crap out here, Juan Soto?
That's right. Let's hear from Bob Nightingale here. The Nolan Arenado trade to the Astros, it doesn't appear to be totally dead. I guess maybe it's on life support in so much as it could still happen between now and the beginning of the year. But this second go-round with it here, so far has had the same results as the first one. Nolan Arenado does not appear ready to waive his no-trade clause to go to the Astros. Here's Bob Nightingale of USA Today, covers MLB for USA Today. Last night on Area 45 with Patrick Creighton and Sean Bajani saying zero traction right now.
Is it possible in any way Nolan Arenado may have changed his mind and now want to come to Houston?
I don't think he's changed his mind on that. I don't. And I don't necessarily think that's, you know, reunited trade talks either. I think it might have came up, but I've heard there was no, you know, talking to St. Louis people. And John Mozeliak, you know, the president of baseball operations, says there's zero traction. So it doesn't look like, you know, that's going to happen at all. And it would become, it doesn't make real sense for it to happen now either. You're changing everything again. It's one thing to do that with Bregman. Starting to do, you know, for the guy that's never played for the Astros before.
You know, it's not like I'm distraught or anything like that. It would have been interesting. It would have made the team stronger this year. But when it comes to acquisitions they bring in, now that we're in that period of a modified reset, it's not tanking by any stretch of the imagination, but you're in a little bit of a modified reset. You're thinking more about the long-term future. I don't know. how great I feel about bringing in a 33-year-old who's been declining the last couple seasons and gushing about how you, oh, we've got him for 3 years.
Yeah.
Well, great. So I've got him through when he's genuinely decrepit towards the end there. Versus, okay, the prospect of a Vlad Guerrero Jr. or something. God knows what they'd have to give up to get Vlad Guerrero Jr., but that's much more enticing to me at this point.
Yeah, it's interesting that obviously if they were to make this trade, they'd be right back over the luxury tax again.
Yeah,
that part is what is kind of intriguing to me, is that it felt like being over the luxury tax, and I think this is kind of the point that Nightingale was making at the end, that they would do all these things for Bregman, who's, you know, he's a franchise hero and he's been here forever.
Yeah.
The luxury tax part of it is interesting to me because Arenado would put them right back over there, and that's the part that's concerning, I guess, is if Jim Crane all of a sudden is comfortable operating above the luxury tax, then cool. You know, if that doesn't prevent them from making moves during the season, then awesome.
Yeah.
But that would be my concern, is that, okay, this is, you know, you're in gridlock now salary-wise.
Yeah, Jim Crane's in the position of operating the Astros like a business. And he does and he spends pretty aggressively by the Astros, who are not one of the major revenue teams, where they're higher revenue, you know, larger market, but not the major revenue teams. He's up there in the top five of spending every single year.
Yeah.
Barring him selling his company or taking his company public or something, like to where he gets to be like the owner of the Mets, Cohen, who's just so rich and is just willing to spend freely and
doesn't
liberally because these are like playthings to him. That's the realm we're going to operate in. It doesn't make a lot of business sense for where the Astros are right now to get Arenado, even at that discount. The reported discount was that the Cardinals were going to pay $10 to $15 million of his salary.
15 to 20 of the 60 that he still owed. Yeah.
And the Rockies are already paying him $10 million of that too.
Yeah.
But it's I get why they wouldn't do it.
Yeah,
and that's the discussions, again, were also before they made the moves for Paredes.
It was after Tucker. Paredes came over.
Well, before they brought in Walker.
Exactly. This is where I wish Spillane was here. You know what Spillane, one of his big credos is when it comes to the Astros? F them profits.
Right. He's like, it's not my money.
He's a big, it's not my money guy.
It's not my money, but I feel like when I'm talking about what a team will do, there's always a discussion. A lot of times in sports, people are having two separate arguments as they're arguing. One person is arguing what they should do, and the other person is arguing what they will do or what they can do.
Right. This is how they operate.
Yeah. What a team will do and what they should do are two entirely different scenarios. That's all. Like when you're talking about a player, like, well, no, he'll never get paid this amount of money because this, and this. Sure, great points, but somebody out there is going to pay this guy.
Right, which is why I caveat what I just said before with, if Jim Crane is now changing the way he's viewing the luxury tax, you know, like if he's going to go over it, he's going to hang out over it, he's comfortable making deals over it, he's comfortable being over the luxury tax, and if I have a mistake, I'll flush it and I'll actually replace it with something that's viable, you know, then that's a different conversation. But we know that he treats that competitive balance tax, that luxury tax threshold, as if it has some sort of gravitational pull, you know, but from both directions. If he's above it, then he's going to work to get back at or below it, like he did by trading Ryan Presley.
Yeah.
If he's below it, he'll spend up close to it. You know what I mean? It is a number that they as a franchise tend to gravitate towards. If all of a sudden now he's going to hang out and spend above that and be comfortable spending above that, well, this changes all sorts of conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Then I say go for it and get Arenado, because if he is declining, then an owner that operates like that will just flush the mistake, move on, maybe pay some of the salary to get rid of him and send him to some other team, and then replace him with a viable third baseman. This is what the tippy-top teams do.
Yeah.
This is what the Dodgers and the, you know, the Yankees and the Mets and teams like that do.
Jim Crane is not operating
tippy-top salary-wise.
Jim Crane is not operating his team the way that I operate with my food spending when I'm on one of these trips,
where
Odyssey is paying for my meals.
Yes,
and I'm way more dumb about how I spend my meal money when Odyssey is paying for my meals.
The worst thing I did was go to the grocery store yesterday just to get peanut butter.
Right. Yeah, and how much did you end up spending for that peanut butter?
$40.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I got more than just the peanut butter. I don't want people to think I bought the most expensive peanut butter.
Yeah.
But I bought like seven other things.
I did the same thing yesterday. I went to the store and I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll just put, you know, I'm putting this on our expenses. And then I ended up spending pretty much my whole budget.
Nice job,
at Publix.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I paid for it, unlike some athletes. I paid for everything I got.
I did, too.
Yeah.
Unlike some non-athletes.
But then we went to this place yesterday, Cholo Soy, which I'm recognizing a theme here with what something that happens on some of these trips.
Yeah.
I cannot get Guy Fieri out of my life.
Is that a Guy Fieri place?
It was one of the ones that he did.
Oh, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Yeah, yeah. It's on that list.
Okay. And
Parker Hillis, our boss, he's an aficionado of that list.
Yeah.
So when we were in Las Vegas for the Super Bowl last year, what restaurant was in the on the ground floor?
Guy Fieri.
Guy Fieri one. And I went and I spent like $478 for a taco. It was very, very, very overpriced.
The one we went to last night was...
It was very reasonable.
Yeah, if you're coming down here... For spring training at all, I'm sure we have people listening who will. Cholo Soy, man. It was good.
It was really good.
It was good. I got three tacos. I got brisket, I got steak, and I got octopus. And I got a beer.
You're very intelligent animals,
for
you know.
30,
the octopi.
Not intelligent enough to escape us when we want to eat them.
Okay,
they were so smart, they wouldn't get
eaten.
I'm
going to send you to a documentary about an octopus.
You're going to make me feel bad about one of life's pleasures.
Yeah, I'm going to do that thing where I'm going to be an annoying vegetarian here all of a sudden.
You could do it with anything. It ain't going to work.
I know. No, it's ditto.
Yeah.
I understand and agree with all of your arguments about why I shouldn't eat animals.
Yeah.
As barbecue sauce is drizzling from my face. Yeah.
No, that is a very cute cow over there.
That is a very good argument you make. Now, pass me the brisket.
Yeah. It's a very cute cow. Oh, that chicken running around? Very cute. Yes. He's cuter a la Parmesan. Yes.
You know what? No, I was proud of myself because I got a bowl, like relatively healthy. I'm trying to limit starches.
Yeah.
And but then I got the margaritas were expensive.
Oh, were they pricey, margaritas?
It was like $10 for a little plastic cup
margarita. Yeah, it wasn't a big margarita.
No.
Was it good?
It was good.
Okay, that's good.
I mean, it's hard to screw up a margarita.
Yeah.
Was it sugary and sweet? Yeah, sure.
Yes.
Could I barely taste the tequila?
With
yes.
optimal tequila,
that's my,
you couldn't taste.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good, man. Cholo Soy, if you're coming down here. If you're listening and you're already down here, let us know.
Reach out to us on Twitter if you're down here, especially if you're going to the Mets game today. We'll try to hook up into you.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. On a Tuesday, we will be live at the Astros and the Mets game today. So, yes, follow us on our social media. We will keep you in tune with everything going on.
The Sports Radio 610 Instagram especially.
Yes, Instagram, Sports Radio 610. Up next, prominent former player in the media now says that the Texans must do this in the offseason. We will tell you what that is coming up next.
The march to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Radford from Baseball Isn't Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Live from West Palm Beach. Thanks to Academy Sports and Outdoors and Exclusive Furniture. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Seth, I'm not going to lie. Just looking at a lineup, being out for a game that we're going to today has me very excited.
Yeah.
Very excited.
Ooh.
The Astros lineup is out. We get our first look at Mauricio Dubon batting leadoff at second base. I doubt he'll bat leadoff in the regular season. I believe the left fielder, Jose Altuve, will do that. But Isak Paredes batting second at third base. Christian Walker, we're going to get a look at our new guys early here, man. Christian Walker batting third at first base. Ole Yiner getting a little DH run. Little Caratini at catcher. And in the outfield, Gamel right field, McCormick left field, Jake Myers center field.
Oh, you got to get that ranginess in there.
Let's go.
We've got Guillorme
at shortstop. No Jeremy
Blanco
Pena.
Blanco pitching, of course.
Yeah, no Jeremy Pena today. So, Blanco pitching. Yeah, we'll see a few of the other guys as well. So this will be fun, man. Yeah, just seeing the lineup here gets me very excited.
So the guys I'm most excited about seeing today, Paredes and Walker, obviously.
Yeah.
Diaz, just because, hey, big. Every year will be a big year for Diaz, but I think Diaz has kind of been lost in the shuffle in terms of the guys that actually did some really good things last year.
And the attention they're getting.
Yeah. But you're fixated on a couple of the glitches that he has as a catcher, mostly in his pitch framing, but doing a lot of other things really well defensively as a catcher. So I'm excited to see Diaz, mostly because I feel like I've neglected him. Mm-hmm. And then Chaz McCormick. Chaz McCormick and what he does at the plate this year. Can he look more like he did in his first three seasons than he did last year?
No doubt. Yeah, debuts. These are the debuts. All these other guys have played other than Paredes and Christian Walker. This is their debut for the Astros here in spring training. So we'll have eyes on it today, man.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that. That'll be fun.
It's a beautiful day.
Beautiful.
It's going to be fun.
It'll be
good. Out and get some baseball in our blood,
indeed.
Sean.
Indeed. Circling back over to the Texans. By the way, be listening in the 9 o'clock hour. Your next chance to win tickets to the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. John Pardee tickets is what we're giving away in the next hour. Stephon Diggs. This will be a discussion point until Stephon Diggs winds up signing somewhere. One strong voice saying, bring him back. Got to bring him back. Marcus Spears, ESPN, says, got to bring him back.
Marcus Spears, Houston doesn't have a ton of cap room. How much should they prioritize bringing back Diggs?
I think it should be a heavy priority. Tank Dell would have been that guy. Obviously, the injury history is something that you have to pay attention to. You also think about the way that Stephon Diggs plays the receiver position. A very, very coordinated wide receiver, understands routes, understands how to get in and out of breaks. And you couple that with C.J. Stroud's ability to be a precision passer, I think it's a great combination. Obviously, we know Nico Collins is the number one guy on that football team, but to have a complimentary two, like a Stephon Diggs, who at one time we was in the conversation for being the best wide receiver in the NFL, I definitely think that they should explore it.
Okay, so he went from they definitely got to do it to they definitely got to explore it.
Yeah.
They're definitely exploring it. I don't think he has to worry about that. So depending on what Marcus Spears' standard was for how the Texans should be operating, they're already doing, as the standard got lower and lower towards the end of that sentence, they're definitely exploring it. Okay, they were a better offense with Stephon Diggs than
yes.
they were without him. And everything that Marcus Spears just talked about right there is 100% true. Stephon Diggs could get separation. It could get separation quickly. So in a year where the offensive line and the pass protection in general, because I got to include the tight ends and the running backs in that, was so abysmal, it was a viable option a lot of times for CJ when he had to get rid of the ball quickly or when he was under duress. And they were a better football team when Stephon Diggs was in there. So, but having said all that, he is also 1 year older and coming off of an ACL. So all of those things that Marcus Spears mentioned about the positives are 100% true last year. I don't know what he's going to offer in terms of all of that this year. When you talk about a guy whose shiftiness and his short area speed is one of his strengths, how much of that does he have? And the savvy is great, but it's not going to bail you out of trouble the way that it did last year necessarily. Hopefully CJ doesn't have as much trouble in terms of pass protection this year, but I don't think it's a gotta have him type of situation.
The thing about Diggs, just thinking about, because I was thinking about their record. He got hurt in week 8. They won that game. That was a Colts game. They were 6-2 in games where Stephon Diggs played. They were 4-5 in the regular season after he was gone. So without him, they were a middling, mediocre football
right,
team.
Right, and that's just the wins and losses. As an offense, they dropped dramatically. They were just kind of they weren't doing great when he was in there, but they were one of the worst offenses in the league over the second half of the season.
Correct. This is what I wonder, independent of how bad they were offensively, 3 of the next 4 games after he got hurt, the Texans lost 3 of the next 4 games. They lost that Jets game on Thursday night with just an abysmal performance on both sides in the second half of that game. The defense wasn't good in the second half either. They didn't get any help from the offense. Then in week 10 was the game that they blew the 23-7 halftime lead against the Lions. Then they beat the Cowboys in week 11. And then in week 12 was that horrible loss to the Titans. And I do start to think just things, Seth, and I know it's totally like, this is the most non-analytical thing ever, but I just wonder, like, having Diggs on the sideline for any of those games that they lost that were just horrible losses, just having him down there to get up in somebody's grill, if that changes one of those 3 games, you know what I mean?
Give him some Alex Bregman type advice.
That's something. I mean, those 3 losses were the loss to the Jets, the loss to the Lions, and the loss to the Titans were three of the worst kind of losses you can experience. You let a team up off the mat in the Jets whose season was floundering and floundered after that, too. Yeah. That was their only bright spot all year, was that win over the Texans in that second half that Aaron Rodgers played. You blew a lead against one of the best teams, the best team in football at that time, I think a lot of people thought, in the Lions. Couldn't score in the second half. And then the Titans game, and by the way, in a game where you picked off Jared Goff five times, and then the Titans game, you sacked Will Levis eight times and had a pick six and still didn't do enough offensively to win that game. Like, I just wonder, in games that literally your percentage chance you should have lost that game is something like is less than 10%, if having Diggs there for those games doesn't somehow, just having him down there with them.
The only, okay, and you want to know, you're like, boiling it down to wins and losses isn't always fair because obviously there's three different phases of football.
Yeah.
But the old standard used to be, okay, you got to score at least 24 points in a game. You got to score at least 24 points in a game for your offense to give you a winning effort. That's probably been tweaked up to like 25 or 26 points, really. I mean, from the Jets game on, nine games there, they only scored more than 23 points twice. That it was against the Cowboys and the Titans, which was a loss.
Both of those games had defensive touchdowns in them.
Right, yeah. So the offense didn't score 24 points. The Titans game, they didn't. So they scored more than 23 points once over that final stretch of games.
It was the Cowboys game.
Yeah.
Right, against a bad team.
In nine games, they had one where you look at it as like, okay, yeah, that's a potentially winning effort by the
offense. That, man, that's a great way to frame it. A depressing way to frame it, but a great way to frame it for sure.
So it's where I would put it is there's definitely, obviously, more than just one position, your second wide receiver. They need to improve in more areas than just that. But it does point out how important that second guy can be and why I think that it probably comes through the draft this year.
Yeah.
I think I had a really hard time answering earlier when you asked about whether, who was it? It was between Golden
and Booker.
And Booker, yeah. The Devin Booker, the offensive lineman.
Tyler Booker, excuse me.
I had a really hard time deciding because I don't want to be overly dramatic about their need to flesh out that wide receiving core, and yet if they don't do something to address it, either in free agency or the draft, I think it would be gross negligence.
Yeah, I think the one thing we learned from Nick Caserio last week when we had him on, when it comes to Diggs, was that I don't think anything has happened that's been unexpected as far as other than the ACL tear. Obviously, nobody was expecting that. But as far as like how Stephon and the Texans both have treated his contractual journey, that. Any sort of focus on that Monday, February 17th date was probably overblown, and it sounded like that both sides expected him to hit free agency.
It was a one-year deal.
It was a one-year deal.
I mean, I would imagine they maybe had a brief conversation about it. Maybe that Caserio said, hey, Caserio may have said to the agent, hey, you know, if you guys want to work something out, we're here for you. You know, we'd like to, but I don't think the Texans felt like they wanted to be in a position of being aggressive about it.
And
that's pure speculation on my part.
Right. Yeah. Like, I don't think any feathers are ruffled on either side.
No.
Like, I think both sides are ready for whatever the future holds.
It was intended to be a one-year deal.
Yes.
And I don't think the Texans felt like, okay, this is going to be our avenue to reel him back in. Now, if the season had gone differently and he was healthy, they might have been a lot more aggressive in trying to extend him.
Maybe so. Yeah, maybe so. All right. Be listening the next hour. Chance to win tickets to see John Pardee live at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. He plays Thursday, March 13th. Rodeo ticket Tuesday all day long here on Sports Radio 610. All right, we mentioned the top 101 players on Pro Football Focus yesterday at about this time. The Texans had five guys in the top 101. Who could crack the list next season for the Texans? How many of these guys need to crack the list for the Texans to have the season that we want them all to have next year? That is coming up next.